epidemiology for the government alphabets.
We have to get the government alphabets spelled out.
NIH, NIAID, DAIS, CRP, they've
named us. So you're at NIAID?
I'm right, yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
And I work on WITS and ODB.
Just so you know, all of us, Evelyn, Diana, Karen, and I all work in the same branch, the epidemiology branch of the Division of AIDS.
Right.
Okay. And we do work on the women's studies. We didn't invite any other people to do the other stuff.
Because we didn't care about them.
No.
It's on tape, right?
I forgot it all.
I'm Diana Hartzell, and I work on the women's cohort study, developing that study with the CDC and NIAID and all the other agencies, hopefully.
I'm Janice Cordell, and I primarily work on heterosexual transmission studies, so I've been involved with the HATS, heterosexual HIV transmission study, and more recently I work on a couple studies in collaboration with the CDC, and you'll hear more about that.
Okay.
I'm Iris Laws. I'm with ACT UP New York. I worked on treatment issues, maybe ACT UP issues, treatment issues, TB issues.
Whatever comes up, issues.
I'm Laura Thomas. I'm a member of ACT UP San Francisco, and I work for AIDS Treatment News.
I'm Marina Alvarez with ACT UP New York, and I'm an HIV-positive Latino woman from the South Bronx of New York City.
I'm Maxine Wolf, and I'm from ACT UP New York, and I've been working on epidemiology stuff for a while. So women.
Mary Pickard, formerly ACT UP New York, currently ACT UP LA.
Lorelai Starr, ACT UP
LA. I'm Laura Gosney. this is all new to me. I came with the women from ACT UP New York, and I'm HIV positive.
I'm Shay from Santa Barbara.
So what we wanted to do today is start with all of the different studies, give you the background, what they've done so far, what's been found, what we hope to find, and
found, okay. So now you can say who you are. We were just going to start, so.
So we'll go through the different studies that the EPIC branch has. Part of the pool of contracts and grants and all that that deal with women's issues. And I'd like to start with Evelyn Rodriguez, who can give you start with the WITS study.
Okay.
That's been one of the longer running studies of the EPI branch.
WITS has as its sites Puerto Rico, Chicago.
What's it stand for?
Women in the AIDS Transmission Study. It's primarily a transmission and a natural history study for both women and the babies. And the sites are Puerto Rico, Boston, New York, Chicago, and Brooklyn. And
one site per city or multiple sites?
In Boston, there are three sites.
Okay.
And obviously, in New York, there's a Manhattan site, Columbia University, and Downstate Medical Center. That's formerly called Downstate Medical Center.
What
the health sciences objective.
Yeah, could you just tell us which places they are in each place, because that wasn't listed.
Sure, the University of Puerto Rico in San Juan.
Right.
They're recruiting from the whole island. Columbia University, Upper Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
They're recruiting from Harlem and Washington Heights area. I think they also get some women from the Bronx. Brooklyn is in a basically inner city black area. So they recruit from their immediate catchment area mostly. They have a long history of doing well with recruitment of HIV positive women in previous studies. And University of Illinois in Chicago. And in Boston, there's a Boston Consortium, in Worcester, Boston City Hospital, and Brigham and Women's Hospital with the pediatric component and children's hospital. So far, we've recruited 318 pregnant women and 149 non-pregnant women, all HIV positive. There was, in the beginning, recruitment of some HIV negative women, and instead of dropping them, we've been following them. 217 babies have been born to those 318 women so far. Most of the women have been enrolled in the second trimester of pregnancy, although some have been enrolled for a little more and some in the third trimester. Some at delivery, although the recruitment and retention of those women, you know, over time isn't as good as the women who were enrolled while they're pregnant for obvious reasons. The basic hypotheses that we're testing are trying to identify why some babies acquire HIV infection and others do not, looking at maternal characteristics as well as characteristics of the baby. Some of the variables of interest in that regard is things like risk behaviors, sexual practices during pregnancy, the risk exposure category of the mother, maternal drug use, smoking, ethnicity, immune status, the mother's pregnancy history, STD history, issues like viral load. And then the outcomes that we're looking at, of course, is the HIV positive status of the baby, when the baby seroreverts, and when the baby becomes HIV positive, that is known. In other words, you know, is it by HIV culture? Is it PCR? So we're also looking at issues of early diagnosis in these infants. We're also looking at natural history, and particularly looking at physical growth and development of the child, particularly neurodevelopment and neurologic outcome, with looking very much at those same variables that I outlined. And I had mentioned early diagnosis before, and we're looking at new innovative laboratory tests for early diagnosis, not just culture and PCR, but also looking at some IgA and some other tests that are new.
IgA?
Immunoglobulin. And we're also trying to determine when is the timing of transmission. Does it happen during pregnancy, when during pregnancy, what are those variables during pregnancy that we can look at that are risk factors for transmission? Obviously a lot of those things, you know, dovetail,
right?
The transmission rate, risk for transmission, and also timing. Some of those same tests will help us.
Are you getting information on GP120 antibodies?
Yeah.
And what tests are you doing while the baby is, while the fetus is in utero? Are you doing amniocentesis or?
We're gathering information. Okay, we're getting sonograms. If there is an amniocentesis, we're gathering data from the amnio.
But an amniocentesis is not automatic.
Oh, no. No, only if it's done for clinical reasons. So we're capturing things that are done for clinical reasons, but things that are routinely done include the ultrasound and CD4 count and other maternal, you know, HIV-related tests, as well as STD, you know, cultures.
How about tuberculosis?
I know it wasn't the original protocol. I think we're capturing that if it's done, but I would have to double check to see if that's still.
I think it's done.
Well, I think it's done. If it's done for clinical care, we do have the diagnoses that are done during pregnancy.
Actually, there's been a change lately where this institute started to figure out there's probably an epidemic. TB.
Well, it's,
and they're starting to put it into studies.
On the summary of WITS, the WITS characteristics, it's listed as 2.4 percent of self-reported conditions, but it's not, you know, not
right. Well, we capture conditions, we capture diagnoses, but there is no TB protocol. There is no, you know, planting of PPD at a certain time in pregnancy, and there's, because of the logistics of getting the mothers in to read them, it just early on was decided that it was difficult to do.
Well, you know, there's some large protocols that are going on right mm-hmm. now, new ones, and, you know, since women are usually under-enrolled in these things, I mean, if, you know, just even access to this protocol and access to it, know about it, et cetera, that their doctors know about it, because there's a lot of uninformed doctors and so forth mm-hmm. with regard to TB.
Well, we're fortunate that in this study, all of the sites are ACTG sites or NICHD.
But that doesn't make any difference. They're uninformed, too.
Yeah.
Nobody knows anything about TB,
they,
it turns
out. Know, actually, Apple, they just had a big meeting the other day where a lot of people in the allergy figured out they really need to do a hell of a lot more about TB, and I think a lot of the protocols are going to change. Sure. And the women's study, definitely there'll be a TB. So this is a change that's coming
through. The fifth research question is a natural history question in the women. What is HIV progression during pregnancy and also postpartum? What are the variables that would lead to more rapid progression of disease in moms? And also when they're obviously following them when they're not pregnant. Sorts of questionnaires that are administered, you have copies of very detailed sociodemographic questionnaires, medical questionnaires, medical exams, OB exams, ultrasound studies. If there's a CVS or amnio done, that information is captured. If the woman or the baby has been admitted into the hospital, we get the information from that and we go back and grab the data from those hospital charts to be able to capture that.
When was WIT starting? When did you first start enrolling?
It's been such a long time. Let me see. I started here in 89. I think it was 1990, in the winter of 1990.
So you're about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems as though, from the preliminary data that we received, which I really appreciated seeing, that the Puerto Rico site has by far enrolled the most people. And I was wondering why you thought that was. And, you know, are there different incentives being given to enroll people in Puerto Rico?
I think there are several things operating. Number one, it's an island. So obviously, the tertiary care center that exists in San Juan is going to capture all of those HIV-positive women who need, you know, tertiary-type care. In Puerto Rico, I don't know if you're familiar with the healthcare system, but they already have set up decades worth of experience of having community health centers do the primary health care screening. And then the women get referred to a lethal hospital for anything that needs more than what they can provide in the community health centers. So that town or regional district hospital then takes care of those women. If it's something that the secondary care hospital cannot take care of, they then will refer to a tertiary care hospital, and that usually is located in San Juan. And for things like HIV infection, pediatric surgery, cardiac surgery, neurosurgery, those things are always done in the tertiary care hospital in San Juan. So that system has been in place for many, many years, and it was just a matter of plugging those women in the same system. The other thing is that they have done a very good job of screening women in the community health centers for HIV and during pregnancy. And something that the women want, and over 99% of the women that are approached for HIV testing during their pregnancy consent. And so the referral system is enhanced by the fact that there's basically universal screening in the OB clinics in the community health centers. And then they get directly referred to the study staff in San Juan.
Wouldn't it be safe to say that possibly that happens because there aren't any many more places where they can go to and get this kind of treatment?
Well, that's exactly the
very
point.
Very limited.
That's exactly the point. Our site happens to be the tertiary care hospital
that these women
would routinely get referred to anyway.
So there isn't any really many other places that is much known or that they have these things available for them?
Exactly. And other than catching a plane to go to New York to get the care, you, as it were, have a captive population in terms of being able to recruit into your study. But it happens, I think, to be an accident sort of the way the healthcare system works, number one, and number two, the fact that Medicaid doesn't cover AZT and mm-hmm. other drugs for HIV treatment.
So your study would be a comprehensive place for them to go to and with the study and the medications and the knowledge.
Absolutely.
Would be like an ideal place.
Absolutely.
For them to.
The pediatricians there and the obstetricians there are very, very committed to these women. And they know how to get these women on AZT, even if it's outside of a clinical trial.
When I was reading the procedures, I mean, I think that it's important to think about that in terms of, high enrollment. The procedures manual in here basically says that interviewers should stress that services are an incentive. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's what the procedures manual says that I was sent. It tells the interviewers, make sure that you stress that these women will get services. So I think that in a place like Puerto Rico where there are no services available, what you're saying is Medicaid doesn't cover a lot of stuff and
Medicaid doesn't cover pantamidine.
I know.
They just can't afford it.
So we can't take that as a model, because if women have nothing, and basically the only way to get something is to enroll in a study, and then the interviewers are told to stress that fact, the success rate at getting people to test and come into a study is pretty, you would pretty much expect that that's what women would do because they don't have any alternative. So it's not, it's not a good model of how to get people enrolled in a study in a place where they can get those things elsewhere. It also, is not a, it
we
got
really,
me a little
concerned. We really struggled with that, because those of us who know Puerto Rico well and know about HIV-infected people in Puerto Rico know that the services, until very recently, have been very, very poor. Fortunately, San Juan and the Puerto Rico Department of Health have developed an infrastructure of immunology clinics throughout the island where people are now getting evaluated for the HIV infection. As a matter of fact, they've screened over 3,000 HIV-infected persons throughout the island.
Anonymous testing or confidential?
People go to the immunology clinic, and 3,000 people have been identified who are HIV positive. It's not anonymous testing. They're coming because they suspect they're HIV infected. They are HIV infected, and then they're taking immunology.
Yes, I heard at September conference on Latinos and HIV that the good thing that's happening for them now is that they'll be qualifying for the Ryan White funds in order to be able to buy AZT and distribute it. Not at the level that is needed, but at least at some level. Mm-hmm. So that was the last great thing that they were talking about and so happy about that's going on there for them now, which sounds minimal to us, but for them it's a milestone.
Yeah. That coupled with the fact that they now have an infrastructure mm-hmm. really
also
really matters. And Johnny Huyang and his team should really be congratulated for that effort.
Can I, Ellen, unless other people have more about
I have some questions about the study.
Oh, no, it's about
Okay, go ahead.
I was wondering how
how many, if it started in 1990, then most of these babies, do you have any initial, do you know how many of these babies
enrolled? No, I want to see our
positive. The 217, they aren't old enough yet to have positive conclusive seroconversion rates.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, however, may already be showing signs of HIV infection.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any preliminary data on that? Okay. And how many of the 318?
But we will have information on that by January Council.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Of the 318, I don't remember if you said this, how many are taking AZT, or are any of them, or is 076? Has 076 tried to tag on to this study, or is it
supposed to be
within it, or?
Yeah.
That's several questions in one. Number one, you're asking if any of these women are AZT. They are on AZT if it's required for their clinical care.
Like if they're 300 or less CD?
It depends on what the obstetrician is, indicated for clinical care. So there's not an across the board. If you're under 500 or under 200, treat. They go according to their own clinical criteria.
Excuse me, the timeline itself?
No, and the reason why I don't have a lot of the hard data that you're asking for is that we had two data centers involved with the study, and the first data center was Westat, and they had their own data management system, and we're in the process now with another contractor to switch over from one data system to another, and we're now taking the old data and putting them into the new system, and online we're also entering the newer data into the new system. So it's a function of the fact that we have two different data centers, and that's why we're working with our data center to get some of the preliminary information, like the transmission rate in time for council, so that we can better inform. All right. 076, as I said, since a lot of these sites in Puerto Rico, New York, Boston, University of Illinois, are also ACTG or NICHD sites, they will have women who are dually enrolled in WIT and in 076. Okay. A lot of the women don't want to enroll in 076, and not surprising.
Right. Yeah.
So those women, though, who are approached and want to enroll in both, that's fine. They will enroll them, and they will be approached for both studies. Mm-hmm. And at each of the sites, they've made an effort to integrate. Many times those same people who are helping to enroll patients in with and taking care of them clinically also do the same in the 076 study. So there is an attempt at each of the sites to make it easier on the woman in terms of the logistics if she's enrolled in more than one study. Here in program, I've worked with Mary Colmaine and Jim Baldley in trying to identify those variables that are common in both of the studies, and I've made some suggestions to the project officer of WITS, who's Rod Hoff, about things that we can do in data. For example, the WITS data, since we're getting longitudinal information, can assist with CD4 count in infants at certain ages, both cross-sectionally and over time, comparing those who are HIV infected with those who are not, and trying, what they've done is that they've made guesses about what sorts of CD4 counts and other parameters are considered to be adverse reactions for clinical trials in pediatrics. And it may be that WITS, since we're following them longitudinally, will be able to identify whether those guesses were overestimates or underestimates.
I don't understand what you mean by adverse reactions.
Oh, in other words, if they've taken guesses with regards to things like white counts, with regards to things like CD4 counts in these children, because there hasn't been a lot of information of what normal
on all children.
On all children. And so for studies like 076, where we in program want to be ethically very careful about you know, the effect of AZT on these infants and on these
mothers.
You mean
there's no natural history of, you know,
of kids.
Of kids.
Yeah.
And yet they're going away along with many protocols, you know, in the ACTG. There are, you know,
well, our it's a catch-22 because our hands are forced to try to find an effective treatment for these infants. Yes.
Well, where is the history for
we
the
don't
kids?
Have a lot of...
Is there a history, a natural history study?
As well as some others,
this
whatever they've gotten out of WITS. Whatever you've gotten from WITS in the last 2 years is the natural history that...
This is
so
the natural
whatever
history
you get from this
is
what you're guessing is coming
is
forward to...
Can I just add, the CDC does some natural history studies. They have several sites. I am just... Okay.
Mm. Wow. All I'm saying
we'll
is that there
we'll
isn't
that.
A lot of... there is not a lot of published data on some of these things that we're calling adverse reactions that we're attributing to drug that may not be due to drug. Okay? So, we...
What drug? AZT
or other drugs that may be in clinical trials in pediatrics. So, the pediatric branch, okay, has decided on some parameters, they're taking guesses on those parameters and cutoffs that may be adverse reactions, but they really don't know. They're taking educated guesses, all right? Because we are trying to find adequate treatment for pediatrics.
Yeah, but in your program, you're trying to find the natural history data on kids also, and where is the data that you have for? Is January when the first data is going to be?
In January, we will be able to report on certain number of variables in the study.
Have they done longer studies with bigger numbers in Europe? Do you know about the studies?
Yeah, they have.
The European Collaborative
Group.
Yeah,
they've been cooking with for a long time.
So, women who do enroll in 076 and you know, the idea that the women have access to AZT and then after birth of their child have no access to it is...
That's not true. The women are followed for clinical care as well.
Yeah, well, you said that in Puerto Rico, for example, the access...
It was dismal, but now that they have the infrastructure with the immunology clinics, they're able to be referred there, and there was always a referral system within... Ciencia Medica, the hospital there, to get women on AZT. There was also a referral system to GLEPS, the STD center there, who was also treating HIV positive people. So there's always been access to care, AZT, somewhere, somehow, by hook or by crook, because the obstetricians there are very committed to the women that they care about.
I don't
well,
remember
and,
the
yeah.
endpoint for WITS. Is the end point for the mother's birth, or is it a year and a half after?
In other words, what is our
how long are the women?
Yeah,
that's
here. Okay, we have three visits during pregnancy, one of them being delivery, and we follow the mothers for 36 months postpartum, and we follow their infants that long as well.
So it's 3 years.
How many months? 36?
36 months.
Well, I'm looking at the stuff here. That was in this presentation. Only 6.7% of the women, when they started this, were taking ACT, and more than about half the women had T cell counts above 500. So that's part of the answer to the question. You were asking
that
about,
those were, I think, based on about 183 women, and we have about twice as many
now. Yeah. But, see, I'm not so concerned because I'm not so sure that AZT is what anybody should be taking, so the idea that that's what you push on people is one of my concerns. But epidemiologically, my concern is that the, and we talked a little bit about this last night, that the close connection of hats, of wits and 076 would mean that in terms of eventually using that data in, you know, as a natural history thing, we're really talking about getting a heavy group of women who are on AZT. Okay, that is what I think will be the eventual outcome of WITS by itself and of WITS combined with 076, is that a majority of those women will end up on AZT, whether they were on it or not. And I'm not saying how or why or whatever, but I think that as a subgroup in a larger scale, you know, natural history study, it means that it's weighted towards a group of women who are taking AZT, and we're not getting natural history, we're getting natural history on AZT.
Well, we're getting natural history in the context of the real world.
Yeah.
Where we have some available drugs for trying. Right.
But there are, all I'm saying is that part of a, for an eventual, you know, cohort for a study, it would be really good because there are women who are not doing AZT.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they may be doing pentamidine, they may be doing holistic medicine, they may, you know, they may be taking care of OIs, but they may not be taking AZT. And so, you know, it's important for the eventual cohort for the natural history studies not to only represent people on AZT. You know. Do people have other questions?
If we could go through all of the different studies, then we could get back to like the coordination issues and issues.
Okay.
You know, what to do with the rest of Dave's initiative.
Okay, I just have some specifics about WITS.
Yeah.
One was that 10.4% of the women just were listed as having other reasons for sources of infection. That's a lot of women to have other reasons. So I was wondering what those were. You know, as transmission routes. That was out of these 164. The second thing is that
we don't know.
They don't know.
Nobody knows.
Is it that they don't know? Or see, and I'm going to link it to the next question. There's no question in any of the interviews about have you had sex with a woman. Okay, and no, it's in the ODB. But even in the ODB, okay, you. If you had sex with a man, they ask you, was he an IV drug user?
Right.
Was he bisexual? If it says sex with a woman, you never ask another question. So it's basically to find
yes,
that.
No.
Yeah. So, but on the WITS study, there are none. And yet I know a lot of women who've worked in the settings that you're talking about, and a lot of the women who are coming there who are pregnant have female lovers. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when you get temp and when we were at CDC and we confronted them about the large proportion of other that shows up only in women, it doesn't show up in men, it doesn't show up in IV drug use, it only shows up in women, that we were told from them, okay, that a good number of those, that's where woman-to-woman transmission would go. It's not just that someone says, I don't know how I got infected, but if
you know what really concerns me about all that stuff of overlooking woman-to-woman transmission. You know, by the time you've got an HIV infected woman in your office, you're doing your study, you're giving them care and all that, it doesn't matter how she got it, but it matters that she infects her partner.
Right.
And that's why I think it's so horrible, especially horrible to overlook it.
Yeah.
If you're in a study like this, that is studying transmission and studying natural history, mm-hmm. it needs to be of those, you know, Julia keeps track of, the heterosexual, that saying overtly that it's heterosexual, but in the meantime, it would be useful information to ask if there's been any, you know, I mean, it's fairly detailed about what their male, and a few questions in there about if they have female sexual partners and what they've done with them.
You know, there's a singular lack of imagination on the part of the government about what women do with women.
I know.
Yeah.
That's because we, quote unquote, don't have much sex.
Right.
According to James Kahn, anyway. So that was one thing that concerned me, because with such a high percent of, and we saw data from the AMFAR observational database, recent data, that had 7 cases of women-to-women transmission. Out of 287 women.
Yeah, but, you know, we know it could happen. I mean,
yeah.
The government arguments are usually that it's, you know, low infection level, whatever. Yeah, the education issue is really key.
It's also key, I think it's partly key, but for getting the information out there, and for exactly the reason
it's
that you said,
Diane.
But it's poor information, and it also, sets up a question for me about the women who are in that setting, because if they're hiding something, you know, if no one acknowledges who they are, then they're not going to come and ask questions about that either. You know, so that if they are having sexual relations with other women, no one's ever going to know about it. And then, you know, I don't know what I know lesbians have been closeted in their health care, and they have not gotten good health care. Because if you're not really telling somebody what you're doing, you're not going to tell them a lot of other things that could be part of what's happening for you. So it seems to set up a really bad health care provider client relationship. And in speaking to one woman that I knew who was sexual transmission from her female lover, and hearing her talk about going and having people constantly say to her, you never use drugs, you know. I mean, never asking her what she was, okay, and just constantly, you know, making her explain that and what that did to her as a person, you know.
In a lot of the studies, yeah. A lot of difficulty with any sex question. Straight sex is tough
they're
for
terrible.
Them, you know. So,
yeah.
But to get to lesbian sex, it's just really.
Well, also, how do you know that, you know, it's not a high incident of rape unless you start asking?
Yeah.
I mean, don't assume. That's what I hate about all, you know, these studies. They assume that if you include two women, you're going to have representation of. I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. Well, I think you got the point.
Yep.
Don't assume. You know, we don't know. And I hate it when men say, "Oh no, lesbian transmission." That's so. How the fuck do you know until you study it? I mean, jeez.
I just had two other short. Just things that I didn't see on there. One was that I didn't see, in the data that was here, that there were only T-cell counts for 135 out of the 163 women that were in this report. Is there a reason why T-cell counts aren't being gotten?
I think it's a function of when they were
in. In what sense?
I don't think CD4 counts are done at each and every visit for the women during pregnancy. It's done at certain visits,
yeah.
And I don't have it in front of me. But
it's a
function of, you
isn't
know.
Isn't it an entry level?
It should be an entry level.
Don't they look at it when they first come in?
It should be an entry level.
There's only three visits during the pregnancy, so you wouldn't want to get it.
Is it the Lambda slogan?
Yeah, right. Every three months.
There is a problem with the data entry of all the laboratory results. So we may have had the demographic data, but not the lab data.
Okay.
So do you know if they have CD4 draws? Once every 3 months because they have three visits? Or you don't know?
Oh, they do have it at some time before delivery.
So when they're enrolled is not necessarily the time
see,
to get a baseline on various different things like their STD.
Enrollment is really two visits. In other words, you can get consent for them to be part of the study, but not all of the lab tests may be done at that visit. They may wait until the next visit for enrollment.
So then after their first visit, they may not get all of the information, and then their second visit.
It depends on what you're calling the first visit. If you're calling the first visit when she consents, it may not be done.
Okay, so
day.
Your first day during consent, it may or may not be done. And then the second visit, it may be done if it wasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was done, then it's not going to be done. And then there's only one more visit before birth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I just had, I saw two things down on the list of symptoms that were down here that I thought were interesting. One was like 23% of the women said they had problems with recent memory. Mm-hmm. What was that about? Do you know? I mean, it's the first time I've heard.
You don't remember.
Yeah, it was the first time. I mean, that's a big percentage, you know. And 26.2 said they had unusual headaches. Okay. But these are women with high T cell counts. And I was wondering, like, no one has even talked about those two things.
I guess the issue might be whether or not it's a symptom of the HIV infection.
Like really high. You know, it was like that. Those were two of the higher ones after vaginal candidiasis.
I think it was
I get both.
That was the main
yeah.
You just asked?
They're just asked. There was, in the beginning, an attempt to do an intense neurological battery, but actually in Columbia University, there's a PI who's doing an intense neurological exam on the women who are enrolled there, and some of those women that she has in the study are from the WIC study. So we will have some information from a separate grant that ED sponsors.
What happens if one site is sort of emphasizes that type of 23% of women with, you know, and then the other sites don't have that type of information? It's like somewhat distorted.
No, you misunderstand. In the WIC study, we have this information for all the women. It's the neurological protocol that's not at each of the sites. The intense neurological is a separate study, and it's nested within WITS and enrolling other women who are HIV infected who are not enrolled in WITS and Columbia University. So we have, this represents data from all of the sites.
Right. But it still means that if it's presented as data from all the sites, but the majority of the neurological data is coming from Columbia's sites, then it could be a particular group of women.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Definitely would be in Columbia.
So, it's sort of...
Obviously, women in the catchment area of Columbia
University. Yeah, right. But, I mean, so somewhere that, I guess it should be noted so that people know that it's from a particular place.
I think when WITS gets redone, which is, what a year and a half is, I mean, they need to take those early results if they've got something that looks important or interesting for their research. They need to make sure it's in for the rest of the time. Get in.
For a second. I'm still stuck over here. I'm really stuck on this. One of the goals of this study is the timing of transmission. So here we are, we're back at the consent. And then you're seen 3 months later or at the second visit. And then, and you may have these tests done or not, your baseline or whatever we're calling these things. And then you only have one more visit before birth. How are you going to accomplish your goal in 9 months if you're only seeing them once every 3 months on timing of transmission, whether it was in the first semester, or second, or third? I don't get this. How can we achieve the goal of what this study is, the timing of transmission, if we're not keeping track of the woman and the fetus? Meanwhile, even with baseline.
Maybe the timing of when the LCD4 counts are done and all the other vaccinations done on the woman and then she becomes pregnant.
Well,
is it done until...
When you were saying earlier that one of the goals is why some babies acquire HIVs and others don't. And the timing of the transmission. So I'm stuck on the timing of the transmission.
right.
You don't have data on the
pregnant.
Woman, how do you know?
Okay, now use your imaginations. And I come in and I'm saying, there's no other treatment available. I want to be in this study just because I want primary care. So now we've seen each of them, and you tell me all about this study, and I say, okay, I'd like to give my consent to BMA. Okay, but I have to rush off now. So I'm good. And I come back for my second visit, and now we're getting a little bigger here. We're moving along. So far, we don't know if my HIV status has affected the infant, or what any of my CD4s or anything is, because I had to opt stuff. So here we are now, we're taking the CD4s and we're taking the whole battery or test. And
so is your question how soon after consent she's seen that?
There's that, and then my concern is, if you're only seeing me three times, and the first time can just be a, yeah, let's get together, let's do this, okay, I'll do this, great.
Come
back.
That's
one. And then second is, okay, let's do all of these tests, and do the paperwork and the official stuff. And then the third time is right before I'm going to...
That first enrollment, that the official stuff, they get a whole battery of lab tests done during that immunologic, herpes viruses.
So back here, when I give you consent, you actually do a battery of tests.
But I could be 4 months pregnant.
Let me be able to answer.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
It depends on what her needs of the woman.
if she can spare the time that day and do the lab work on it and do the exam, 9 yards of the enrollment that we've done then, mm-hmm. spare the time for it, caught in a family planning clinic.
Or she's sick or whatever.
Or whatever. And she's just not ready that day to get the bloods drawn and put her legs up in the stirrups and the whole stuff. Then she will get an appointment 1 or 2 weeks later to come back to do the whole thing.
Okay, and, so and in 2 weeks case, later, that's still like the first visit then, right? What we call one visit.
That would be her first visit.
Oh.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And then she would get her battery of tests there. She'll get her battery of tests at the second visit.
Which is about 3 months later.
At the delivery. Mm-hmm. Well, we really try to be very generous with the windows. And if you want a copy of this, I'll be able to make that for you. The first visit is at 18 to 32 weeks of gestation.